It is great to be back. I'm seeing old friends. I've had way too many hugs this morning. It's beyond amazing to be here. So thank you so much for having me back. And let's see if I can get through this and you'll invite me back again, because today I'm a little bit on the ledge here. Every Baptist pastor, they say, has a sin sermon. So this is going to be my sin sermon. Hopefully it will be within your tradition. As I begin, however, I'd like to reflect on how odd and downright miraculous we are here. All of us, collectively first, and then individually. Collectively. First, on this 4 billion plus year old rock we call Earth, something called life has happened. From the mixture of just the right amount of sunshine and climate and periodic table, moisture and carbon, from the molten rocks and minerals and apparently lifeless foundations of our world, there is this creature who can sing opera and send rockets into space. So collectively, we live in a miraculous place. Individually, though, it gets really crazy. Stay with me, though. Just talk up the odds of you being here, and I go, shoo. First, let's talk about the probability of your parents meeting. If each of your parents met one person every day from ages 15 to 40, that would be 10,000 people. Now, let's say the chances of them actually talking to each other is about maybe 1 in 10. And the chances of that turning into a second meeting is also about 1 in 10. And the chances of that turning into a long-term relationship is another 1 in 10. And the chance of that lasting long enough to result in offspring is about 1 in 2. So the probability of your parents even meeting and resulting in kids is about 1 in 2,000. So the combined probability of them having you is already about 1 in 20 million. Long odds, but not impossible. Are you with me? Now things start getting really interesting, because we're going to talk about eggs and sperm. Can I do that here? One particular egg and one particular sperm fused, and now you are here. Each sperm, each egg, genetically unique. A fertile woman has 100,000, I'm told. A man will produce about 12 trillion sperm over the course of his reproductive lifetime. Let's say a third of these, 4 trillion, are relevant to our discussion, because after her menopause, his sperm don't count. Right? Can I get an amen there? So the probability of that one sperm with half your name on it hitting that one egg with the other half of your name on it is about 1 in 200 quadrillion. But we're just getting started, because the existence of you here now on planet Earth needs another supremely unlikely but utterly undeniable chain of events, namely that every one of your ancestors, everyone, lived to reproductive age, going all the way back to the first Homo sapiens, Homo erectus, Homo habilis. But beyond that, all the way back to that first single-celled organism. These were not killed in wars or by accidents or by the plague or malaria. You come from an unbroken lineage of life going back millions of years. But just one accidental break. Delay. Some animal looking left when it should have looked right. And poof, you would not be here. But to keep faithful to our math, we must account for these approximately 150,000 generations by raising 200 quadrillion from our earlier time to the 150,000th power. So the chances of you being born is like 10 to the 1,500,000th power. That's a lot of activity in a long line of cells to produce someone who looks like you. So the word miracle seems kind of small, don't it? Congratulations, though. Each of you has won an incredible, incredible lottery. Now there's some not-so-good news. That was the good news. Some not-so-good news. Imagine you're looking at a family reunion photo, and some of you get your heart seized up. Everyone's there, from great-grandparents and grandparents. There's your parents and those wonderful and sometimes those problem aunts and uncles. You're in there. Your cousins are there. Your brothers, sisters. And family reunions, if you're like me, can be one of the most stressful days of the year. You see, each of those relatives put a little tiny deposit in you, for better or for worse. And I'm here, this miracle child, trying to deal with their crap that somehow landed in my life. As I realize I'm indeed stardust, I also wrestle with ghosts from the past, lively spirits doing their thing in me. I'm reminded of Phil Larkin's poem called This Be the Verse. And for those who know it, I will censor one word, rest assured. They mess you up, your mom and dad. They may not mean to, but they do. They fill you with all the faults they had and add just a little extra just for you. But they were messed up in their turn by fools in old hats and coats who half the time were soppy stern and half the time at each other's throats. Man hands on misery to man. It deepens like a coastal shelf. Get out as early as you can and don't have any kids yourself. That's the bad news. And I'm not going to leave us there, folks. I'm optimistic that we are a mixture of miracle and mystery. Mystery and muck. And my intention is to bring both sides into focus. Because in that totally miraculous picture of you at the reunion, each person with their incredible odds of being there, we are a jumble of light and dark and good and bad habits, addicts and in recovery, joyous and sad, in wonder and less wonderful states of health. Because I've set up this conversation this morning with you because I'd like to address Phil Larkin's thinking by focusing on a three-letter word, one made infamous by us Christians, which we still don't like to mention in polite company, S-I-N, sin. Is it too archaic? Still a useful phrase? Ever go up to somebody at a party, I'm a sinner? Want to hear about it? Are we not tempted to soften so we don't use this three-letter word and say things like, oh, I messed up, or mistakes were made, I forgot. Maybe you're like me. Let's see. Miraculous little me presents a competent, well-groomed exterior, smiling, in control, in states, good states of mental and physical health, educated, etc., etc., etc. No flies on me. However, just peek behind the Wizard of Oz curtain of my life, and you'll discover addictions and near addictions. Proclivities to anger. I am a master producer of revenge videos that take up a lot of the hard drive space in my mind. Can I get a witness? Super educated, trained, good upbringing, but I can easily short circuit these in a flash when somebody cuts me off in traffic. Or when someone says a phrase that could be taken any one of three different ways, but I misinterpret them in two of them. Being Mark is not pretty. I got issues. In Christian language, I sin. On the one hand, we do love our shortcomings. The shadows within us give us some of our best personalities. Can you say Robin Williams? The very short circuits and irregularities within us make for great reads and spicy movies and much talked about plot lines between the I once was lost and but now I'm found. There are 7 billion movie scripts, comic strips, novels, marriages, legends of falling, redemption songs. You know, on the other hand, we do get messages that we are strictly forbidden to mess up or sin. Remember that you are a sinner comes in many ways, and not just at churches, my friends, which can be a kind of pathology. You can see pathology in folks like me who have swallowed the sin Kool-Aid so much that we sometimes think for all our lives that we're so blanking impure as to be useless. Useless to the divine, useless to each other, useless to myself. We Christians are very good with original sinning language, but not so fluent in original blessing. We could use a few Unitarian missionaries to teach us, you know. I'm not kidding. The Christian church could use some evangelization from the UU folks. I get students at Mars Hill like this. They've been told every day or every week that ever and always the first word about them is how they do not measure up and never will. Wretch! They internalize this condition, staying ever off balance. This may work in advertising, but it makes for low self-esteem, higher suicide rates, poorer communities. Now everybody messes up. Me, you, neighbors, Buddha, Mother Teresa, and whomever you'd like to bring into the room. I get this, because we like to live without guarantees, by the seat of our pants. We take risks, we break things. But to re-glue things back together is never a perfect fit. An infidelity in marriage, if it does not destroy that marriage, can be the place where it grows stronger than ever. But the pain may linger. But at these very cracks, I am convinced, are where nature or God or life glues us up again at the very place where a kind of death has occurred. And such cracked up places are the places of amazing grace, of restoration, and places where we are made whole. As we rethink sin, we may confront our shadow sides, which is the very soul work we may need to perform. Ever heard of kintsugi? It's a Japanese art of fixing old pottery with gold lacquer, because breakage and repair are considered to be part of the object's history and therefore beautiful. So it's a kind of, you repair things, you don't throw away, and the repair makes it even more beautiful. Our autobiographical cracks can contribute to an aesthetic wholeness and holiness. Breakage and repair are the graced history of a person. I failed over and over and over again in my life. Hard to imagine being said by the most famous basketball player ever, Michael Jordan. I've missed more than 9,000 shots in my career. 26 times I was trusted to take the game-winning shot, and I missed. I failed over and over and over again, and that's why I succeed. I hope this is no surprise to you. Can we integrate into our lives this paradox of being broken? Our autobiographies can synthesize both the brokenness and its mending. We can be miraculous, wise people, even as terminal illnesses eat away at us. Peace happens in the midst of an inevitable failure. Healing happens while cancers and other mental disorders still rage. Reconstruction happens on the very site of destruction. And resurrection? I think you've got to be dead first, but it happens. You've got to be dead first. The truth is, we're all broken. Somewhere we're all cracked. What we might see as a fault or a malfunction may be something useful. Ever nearly die from a disease? Now, you can be right up front with those who are dying. Getting cracked up may be the first step in being cracked open, becoming a resource for others. Like a seed in the crack of a sidewalk, we can become new life in a barren place. My friends, we do not live in a world, we do live in a world not where suffering and failure might happen, or that it'll only happen to you if you're bad, or that it can happen only to a few unfortunate people in other places, or that somehow being clever or beautiful or nice, you can somehow avoid illness or bad things. No, crap happens. The bumper sticker's right. And it will happen to you. Losing, failing, falling, addictions, and the suffering that flows from these experiences, all this is somehow part of the miraculous human journey. So that father in the family reunion photo that beat you, and the mother who was a drunkard and cast you out of house and home, and now you've got compensating addictions or behaviors of your own. Even this cracked up place of suffering, perhaps in the long view, is a seed to plant, growing into a plant of strength for a survivor, eventually providing lumber for a place to stand, a marker for others, a place from which to practice compassion. Failure is a necessary ingredient of life. It's a seed I can harvest and then plant and water and nurture and garden and grow into something else. So how does this work practically, Mark? The Buddhist taught me this. The very thing I need to work on confronts me in the moment by moment. Getting cut off in traffic is not so much his fault for driving aggressively, but it's my chance to bathe in my quick anger, to bathe it with compassion and patience, because my heart really wants to get larger. When a student gets on my nerves, Ron, where are you? It takes a couple of seconds or maybe a couple of years to finally realize they're reminding me of myself at their age, because my small self really does need to take a break. When I befriend my addiction to whatever, I can see in real time that addictions are most often those misguided adventures in becoming who we need to be. In an addiction, I pick up everything but the best. But I'm a miracle walking around this planet, still somehow wanting the best. Today is the one-year anniversary of this country's reintroduction to its racist shadows. August 9, 2014, we learned about a Michael Brown in the town of Ferguson, Missouri. And now this is added to our national shadow side. My thesis today is something I learned from the Buddhists in Korea. When something bad happens, that's the very karma we need at that moment. The telemarketer, or when ignored by colleagues or higher-ups, or racism, these are exactly what I need to hear to have my heart expanded and to befriend my vulnerability at that very moment. I'm not saying that Michael Brown had to die. No. But to those who are spiritually aware, something is playing footsie with our shadows, and we should really pay attention. Hide or go seek. Face the music or earplugs. Fight or befriend. Grow larger or shrink. Here's something else I learned in Korea. If I just fight my shadows or evil, I maintain them. If I'm addicted to a substance and all I ever do is fight it and see it as my mortal enemy and devote my life to its overthrow, then I shall do exactly what is needed to maintain that enemy. I give it just the oxygen it needs. You know, Fox News, which I know everybody hates, survives mainly in part because its enemies overreact. This is a moral law of the universe. The things we make war upon will take us over. I was at a wondrous gathering in Seoul about 6 weeks ago. The LGBTQ and friends inside a fence and the loyal Christian opposition outside, their drums and high-powered loudspeakers and choirs at maximum decibel level. Like Joshua at Jericho, the Christians encircled the queer crowd with threats and slogans and Bible verses and anything and everything but neighboring love. Their anti-stances defined the circumstances. The queer crowd on occasion tried to reach out, but the Christians seemed too either-or focused to notice that they could turn their enemies into friends. They were in attack mode. Opposition was framing their world. They could only see through their frames. We will be known by what we are against. Today, sadly, the Christian reputation in Korea carries a high negative. They're the always no people. So fighting and leading with your no means you lose your freedom. To befriend the so-called enemy or shadow is to stop the war. We can stop being walking civil wars. To befriend the enemy is to make it into a frenemy. What if we befriend our shadows? Sure, it hurts to draw those skeletons out of the closet. It's shameful how to find out at the bottom of your profound nobility of character, you're actually an ass. When I snap at my partner because I think she's doing something wrong, it's really me with issues that bear attention right then, right there. But it's my addiction. It's my addiction. It's my issues. They're really my gold. The very custom-made karma I need right now to join Rumpelstiltskin and weave straw into gold. Because to befriend my shadow is to weave gold. I can think of no better way to depict this than to hear again from John O'Donohue, and I'll do it myself. He was going to use the word illness. I'm going to use the word shadow. May you find the wisdom to listen to your shadow. Ask it why it came, why it chose your friendship, where it wants to take you, what it wants you to know, what quality of space it wants to create in you, what you need to learn to become more fully yourself, that your presence may then shine in the world. Alcoholics Anonymous portrays addictions as the misguided penultimate search for God, looking for the love for which we are made, but in the wrong ways. Addictions are our friends whom we have chosen, or maybe they've chosen us, knowing somehow they want to take us somewhere, learn something new, create new qualities, new space in us. So may we come to see our shadows as the very karma, bringing us to mercy, as severe as that may be. In Bangkok, one can visit the Sukhothai Golden Buddha, about 10 feet tall, made of pure 100% 24-karat gold, 5.5 tons of it. Gold, as of yesterday, was $1,092 an ounce, if you want to do the math. 600 years old, this Buddha long ago was covered by stucco and clay to protect it from possible invaders. The ruse worked, but the people forgot it was covered by the clay and the stucco. And about every 100 years, the monks would go out and clean the clay and the stucco. But in 1957, using flashlights for the very, very first time, one cleaning monk sees flashes of light underneath the clay. And through the cracks, one could tell the real worth of that statue. For too many years, my folks, my friends, I have been just cleaning my clay, staying on the surface. By seeing the light, or is it love, through my cracks underneath this clay, I see my true worth. Live authentically, remove the masks, and perhaps get over myself. So I may actually hear the pain of this world instead of just recycling my own pains. I'm not here to fight my shadows or to battle with Phil Larkin, but to befriend. Just one person attending his first AA meeting, meeting her alcoholic shadow as the very place to plant her garden for life, that can affect generations. The title of this message is The Cracks Where the Light Gets In, and you may recognize the muffled prayer of Leonard Cohen's song, Anthem. Great song. Ring the bells that still can ring. Forget your perfect offering. There's a crack in everything, and that's how the light gets in. When and as we befriend our shadows and the cracked places, we become illuminated so that others may see. Where we stumble and fail is the very X spot of our treasures. And I say, dig in. Amen.